Welcome back to another episode of Inside SFPS. My name is Cody Donarski, Public Information Officer with Santa Fe Public Schools. And today I am joined by Chaparral Elementary Principal, Erica Martinez Maestas. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for sitting down with me. I'm really excited for this. I've been to Chaparral a few times. It was one of the first schools that I ever went to when I started with the district. Right before the pandemic, Peggy, who is your lovely secretary, won the ESP the month. And it was like one of the first places that I came to take pictures. And it was like right before the pandemic. And since then, I've been to Chaparral a few times. And one of the things that I love most about coming to Chaparral is it doesn't feel like a school. When I come in through the doors, it feels warm. It feels like a home. And I think it just speaks to the culture that you've built here and that it's kind of a building of love. And I think it's really incredible. And I just want to commend you for that.
Thank you. And that makes my heart super happy because we've worked very hard the last 4 years to build a culture of kindness. And we absolutely tell our kids every day that we love them. We care about them. That's what I say at the end of my announcements.
I think you say it on your Facebook post too.
Always, always. I want our kids to know that they're so very loved. We give high fives, we give hugs, we give knuckles. We do all those things.
That must have been hard through the pandemic, not giving kiddos hugs.
You know, I think that's the thing that people miss the most and that I miss the most is we could see our kids through a screen. I could talk to them on text, on calling them. So I had that connection, but you didn't get the high fives. You didn't get the hugs. And our identity as professionals and as educators is our kids. And we didn't have that with them, with us.
And that you would say is probably the hardest part, because I know through the pandemic, we heard stories of the struggles that teachers were going through, the struggles that the kids were going through, all of that. But we never really heard much about what it was like to be a principal through the pandemic. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like, because on a day-to-day basis, you're working with the kids, you know, you're throughout the school, you're popping into classrooms, all of this stuff. And now you were dropping into Google Meets. You weren't able to like have those personal connections with students or with your staff. So what was it like kind of being the principal through that?
So for me, my first year being a principal was the year we went home at spring break. So being a principal through the pandemic is kind of all I've done so far as a principal. It was very challenging. To make connections with people through a screen is very hard. And so we tried a variety of things. I would text families. I would call kids. I had some of the kids' cell phone numbers, so I would text them in the morning to check on them. So we did everything we could to make connections. You know, our distributions were a way to connect with kids. I think one of the high points was that I was able to learn every kiddo's name because they had their name under their picture, right? On a Google Meet. So that has led to now I know every kiddo's name here and I'm able to greet them every morning by name. With staff, it was challenging to keep staff motivated and to have that personal connection and have those relationships with staff.
Well, especially as a first year principal. You know, to build those relationships, it takes a year, 2 years, it takes a long time. So for it to be your first year, you're building those relationships. And then the pandemic comes and I couldn't imagine even being in kind of the driver's seat of a school and then being like, well, my staff has only known me for 6, 7, 8 months as the principal. And now our only communication is through a screen.
Right.
When you came back, what were kind of the feelings? Because I know we still had a lot of the restrictions and stuff like that. But with those relationships, did you think that those relationships were stronger? Did you notice any relationships being stronger because kids were able to interact differently than they did in school, or teachers because they could pull up their dog or their cat and say, this is my dog or this is my favorite teddy bear and stuff like that? I feel like people got to know each other a lot better during the pandemic. So did you see that here?
Absolutely. Our relationships with families in particular became stronger during that season because we were in their homes and they were in our homes. So the kids got to see our own cat and my girls and my husband and And I got to see that in their homes. Mm-hmm. So, and I think because we were all going through this really trying season, we absolutely got to know each other better. And it gave families the opportunity to call me, to email, to reach out, let me know about their work schedules, things like that. So in coming back, we knew everybody so much better. And I think our families trusted us even more because of that season. And with staff, just as an aside, we did everything we could to do distributions. I would mail my staff letters, cards, to have that connection.
So speaking of, you were talking about keeping teachers engaged and stuff like that. What did you do to kind of help keep students engaged? Because I know if I was second, third, fourth grader, and I was kind of set in the situation that they were, where I'm home, there's not this much accountability, where if I leave a classroom, someone knows that I'm gone, I'm walking through the halls, people are seeing me, whatever. If I step away from my computer, people wouldn't know because the cameras are off. So how did you keep students engaged throughout the pandemic?
You know, I would, like I said before, call families. I would call the kids, text kids as needed. I also had the great opportunity during the pandemic to volunteer with communities and schools. So we made food bags, and communities and schools allowed me the opportunity to take those bags to our students. So I would deliver, I had a group of families that I would deliver a bag of food to every week. And in it always had some books, some paper, some pencils, and that allowed me to peek in on kids, say hello to them, of course, through a door and all those things, but it let me know they were okay. We had a couple kids who would need devices, or maybe they didn't know how to get onto a Google Meet, so I would go meet with them at their home, help them get online, you know, just get them connected. And so I think that helped with the relationship and helped keep kids engaged.
I love hearing stories like that because throughout the pandemic, everyone was so isolated. You kind of only knew what was going on in your bubble, your kind of sphere of, you know, your family and whatnot. And you don't know all the other things that were kind of going on. So I love hearing from principals and from schools to hear all that they did through the pandemic, because it wasn't just, you weren't just jumping from teacher to teacher in their classroom, right, on their Google Meet. Like, you were still going out and trying to keep students engaged and doing everything that you could during one of the most trying times to keep students engaged. So I think that's such a great story. Transitioning away from the pandemic to get to know you a little bit more. So you are a Santa Fe local native, and you came through Santa Fe Public Schools. It was Pinon, De Vargas, and Santa Fe High. And when you were kind of growing up, did you always know you wanted to be a teacher? Or what did you aspire?
Yeah, I always wanted to be a teacher. You know, I had some really great teachers all the way through, but certainly at Pinon, I would say were probably my most memorable, you know, your elementary teachers. And we were fortunate that we always went to the same school. So I went to Pinon K-6 and then, like, you know, moved on to De Vargas and the high school. Yeah, I always wanted to be a teacher.
Even from a young age, too?
Even from a young age. I remember playing school with my friends. That was my path and my passion.
Did you have educators in your family?
No. You know, both my parents have college degrees, have advanced degrees. My mom got her degree when we were kids. So we definitely had a strong education focus, but I don't think I have any teachers in our immediate family.
Interesting. So when you left Santa Fe High, you went to, where'd you go to school?
So when I graduated high school, shortly after high school, I had my first daughter.
Wow.
So I had Felice when I was 18. I had her in August, and I started at the community college 2 weeks after was born.
Oh, my goodness.
So I had attended a class in the summer, and then I started at the community college, and I went to the community college for 2 years. And after those 2 years, I moved on to UNM.
And then through that whole time, it was all for teaching?
All for teaching the whole time. So I did my bachelor's in elementary ed, and then I had the great opportunity to do my master's right away. So I did a master's program immediately after my bachelor's at UNM.
I know we are a K-12 district and whatnot, but I just want to say, because I think you were the first person that I've talked to that went to community college, and I went to community college for my first 2 years, and I cannot say enough how much I loved going to community college. I know it wasn't, especially in my time, it wasn't the most traditional path. You know, let's go away to a four-year school or go to a university or whatever. I can't say enough good things about going to community college. I was someone who needed to grow up, truthfully, leaving high school. I needed those 2 years kind of at home to grow up and mature and prepare myself. So that way, when I did go to a university, I was in the right mental state to be able to go and not just completely turmoil everything right. that I had worked for. So I just want to give a little plug that community yeah. college is fantastic. Even if you know what you're going for, I know a lot of people say, go to community college if you don't know what you want to do and get all your general education credits done there. Mm-hmm. But I knew what I wanted to do. And obviously you knew what you wanted to do. Right. So I can't say enough good things about community college. So mm-hmm. switching from there, after you got your master's, mm-hmm. Did you do any student teaching in that time, or what was your kind of first teaching gig?
So during my master's, I taught at the mm-hmm. same time. So it was a program that you did both. And I taught at East San Jose in Albuquerque, taught there for 5 or 6 years, I think. And then mm-hmm. I moved on to Lew Wallace, also in Albuquerque, for several years. After Lew Wallace, it was time for us to come back home to Santa Fe. I had met my husband, my parents were here, and it was time to come home. Mm-hmm. So we returned. And now I've been back in Santa Fe, I think, for 12 years.
Oh, wow. So yeah. When you got back, mm-hmm. what was your, did you come back to Santa Fe Public Schools? Mm-hmm. What school were you at?
So I was at Amy Beale mm-hmm. for several years as a first and second grade teacher. And then I moved on to Kearney as an instructional coach and got my admin license while I was at Kearney. I moved on to El Camino for a year as an assistant principal. And then this Chaparral gig came mm-hmm. up, and we live in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
So it was a perfect opportunity.
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't know actually that the year of the pandemic was your first year as a principal here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I totally thought you had been here, you know, for many years before that.
No. So this is my fourth year as a principal mm-hmm. and hopefully our most normal year. I'm looking forward to being able to start and end mm-hmm. with these kiddos and, you know, things like a traditional sixth grade promotion, all those things I'm really looking forward to this year.
I know before we hopped on, you were kind of giving me a rundown of your day. And I think it's so interesting because my perception of a principal, and it was kind of a lot of the principals that I had growing up, was principal never really left the office. You know, if you saw the principal walking the hall, it probably wasn't a good thing. Like something was going on if the principals were walking through the hall. But hearing you explain your day today, doesn't seem like that seems to be the case for you here. So if you want to give a little rundown of your day and how, what the day of a principal could look like.
All right. So today was above average as far as how busy it was, but we started the day with a kiddo who was walking to school that we didn't anticipate walking to school. So we checked on her to make sure she was safe, and she was walking down Zia, and we know our kids, so we wanted to make sure she was safe. We got her here. Shortly after, we went ahead and did a lockdown drill, which went great. It was smooth. All our staff did everything they were supposed to do. At lunchtime, I was walking up to actually check on cafeteria and recess. A kiddo had hit her head, so we cleaned her up. And then shortly after, we had a couple of kids with wasp stings Oof. For Toss No Moss Day. So while they were trying to do a very good deed, they had some stings, so we took care of that. It was a little busy, a little crazy, but those things are kind of beyond the normal, I would say. Yeah. But absolutely, I try to be in classrooms. I try to be out at duty. Things like paperwork I do at night or in the morning before school starts. You mentioned just, you know, when the principal's walking up the hallway, I really try to have a positive relationship with our students. So this week we started making star calls. And so when kids are making good choices, they come down to the office and they get to call a parent or grandparent and let them know about the choices they're making. So the kids do the talking. I don't do the talking. So it's very sweet to hear kids say like, Dad, I've been friendly to kids and I've been finishing my work. And so that's something we started or got started again.
Oh my God, post-pandemic. That's so sweet.
It's very sweet.
I think and I have a 2-year-old, so she hasn't gotten the words and like the understanding right. But when she does little things, even now when like you hand her something and she says, thank you, I'm like, you're the cutest thing on the planet. Yeah. So to have like a kid and like that positive reinforcement of like making good choices, and you get to, you're highlighting and allowing them to be proud of the good choices that they're making. So I think that's super sweet.
And selfishly, it's so much fun for me because I would much rather talk to a kid who's making good choices, you know, and then that sets the stage for if they do make a bad choice, we already have that relationship with them and their family. And their families know we don't only call
for
bad choices.
And I think that, like, if I was a parent and I got a call from, you know, my daughter's teacher, my daughter's school, I'd be like, oh no, what happened? Mm-hmm. Is she hurt? You know, your mm-hmm. head's already going. You're like, what happened? Did she get into a fight? Blah, 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 blah. Obviously, she's a 2-year-old, so she doesn't really get into fights. But, you know, all the things are kind of running through my head. And then to be like, to hear like, oh, hi, I just wanted to let you know that I helped clean up in the lunchroom today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever, like, I would be so proud as a parent to hear my kid call and like be proud of the good things that they're doing in school. So, that's so sweet.
Oh. Parents love it. And I do always tell them everything's okay. Your kiddo's not sick. They're not hurt right away so that they know, you know, that we're making a good call.
So if that was an unusual day, what does a normal day look like? I don't even know if there is a normal day.
I don't know if there's a normal day, but a typical day, I guess, start with coming in, checking who's absent, any emails, things like that. I've typically checked my email before I get here, but I check it again. Then I do morning duty, greet all our kids as they're crossing the street in the morning and getting dropped off. I try to make it to classrooms each day, check on classrooms, try to do walkthroughs, try to visit classrooms at least once a week, attempt to make it up to the cafeteria every day for lunch duty. If we have a nurse, or if we don't have a nurse, sometimes we're doing Band-Aids, ice, things like that. After school, do duty again. And in between, you know, chatting with teachers, my door is almost always open. Few exceptions. So there's, you know, teachers coming in, asking questions all day, checking in with kids, doing those star calls.
You wear a lot of hats.
Lots of hats, but it's fun. I have such an awesome staff and awesome families that we're really blessed and really fortunate.
Were you always, just kind of based on what you had said your experience was, were you always an elementary teacher?
So I've only taught first and second grade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and then when I was an interventionist, I worked with upper grades, but as a classroom teacher, only with the little guys.
What for you was kind of the draw to the little kids? Because I know everyone has kind of their favorite grades. Chris and Sonia, I think, had said that their favorite grades were middle school. I think that's crazy.
Yeah.
But they love it. And you know, they talk about how influential it is and like just understanding the kids and what they're going through and just being kind of a supportive person. What was it for you that was kind of the littles, the first and second graders that really like, that you were like, that those are the grades that I want to teach?
For me, I feel like that's where I could make a difference with the little guys. That's their foundation. You know, I think that's where we set them up for success. So it's a great, great opportunity, you know, and that's where I did my student teaching. I did it in a 1-2 class in Albuquerque and just found that I really enjoyed working with those kids. And when I look back on my education, those were some of my favorite teachers as the lower grades. Mm-hmm. I love sharing books with kids. I love seeing them grow, you know, and I think you see so much growth in first and second graders because they're babies when they come in and they develop so much. You could still be developmentally appropriate in the lower grades. Mm-hmm. You're still looking at those kinds of things, emotional growth and academic growth. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. I never really understood the younger grades and stuff like that, how much actually happens, like how fast they grow. I know everyone says kids grow up so fast and whatever. And when you're not a parent, you are just like, yeah, sure. Everyone says that. How can it, whatever. And then you have a kid. And then every day my daughter comes home and she has a new word or she does something new. And you're just like, how did you learn how to do that? And, you know, I give credit to the teachers that are at the early childhood center right now that are working with her and stuff like that. But, you know, they do learn so much. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure for you, those kiddos that you had in first and second grade, when you see them at their sixth grade promotion ceremony, that must mean so much to you while you didn't have them for those other 4 years, seeing them and that the kind of kids and semi-young adults that they've become must be super powerful for you.
Absolutely. And now those kids are adults. You know, my first year, those kiddos are probably 25, 26. So sometimes I run into some of them in Albuquerque or run into their families, and it's fantastic to see them being productive citizens, doing well, whether they're working or going to school. It is a great reward.
For any of the parents listening, especially the parents that come to your school, what is kind of one of the big goals or one of the things here that you want to accomplish or something that you really just try to do every single day?
Just like what we said at the beginning, I want our kids to know that they are so very loved here, that we care about them. We want them to do well. We're going to love them when they're making good choices, and we're going to love them when they're making bad choices. And same with the families. You know, I want them to come to us when they're going through a trying season, when they need help. And we do have families come and let us know about things that are happening. And I want them to know they can come here, you know, and they can be vulnerable. They can tell us what's happening, and we'll help them through whatever season they're going through.
I think one of the things that I've always found interesting is that understanding of, we'll call it quote unquote bad behavior, and how to, I feel like, and even when I was in school, which wasn't that long ago, it was very easy to be labeled as a bad kid because of some bad behavior. And I don't think we had nearly the resources that we do here in Santa Fe Public Schools to not really pigeonhole kids who have bad behavior and just call them, oh, these are bad kids. And then now they end up getting bad grades because they're viewed differently and stuff like that. Can you talk a little bit about, I don't want to call it the importance of understanding bad behavior, but kind of the human side of it, like knowing that just because a kid made a mistake doesn't make them a bad kid and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Why look at everything as a choice? You know, down to the tiny things, it's a choice to come to school. It's a choice to get ready in the morning. So I always, when I speak with kids, I tell them, you know, they're making choices. So there's good choices and there's bad choices. And that doesn't make you a good or bad person, you know, your choices. I think it's important for us to absolutely not label kids, but to redirect them into making a better choice. With our students, as the principal, I think it's particularly important to let kids redeem themselves. So if they make a bad choice on Monday, Tuesday is a new day. And I really make it a point to greet those kids the next morning and give them that high five or even call them down and say, yes, yesterday was a hard day, but today's a new day. We still love you and we're going to help you make a better choice today. I'll also talk to kids about bad choices being a speed bump. So you made a, you know, this is a speed bump, but tomorrow you have, again, new opportunity, new chance to make a good choice.
New pavement ahead of you.
Totally. And I think it's really important that they get a fresh start. And sometimes it means a fresh start after lunch. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we need to give them that opportunity to reset. And sometimes my office is that, and that's a normal day too. Sometimes kids need a little space to reset, and they'll come down, sit, read a book, do some drawing, some writing, and then they're ready to go back to class.
And that's so important for students' social, emotional wellness and well-being, and, you know, having that space to know, like, I'm having a bad day. Mm-hmm. It's okay to have a bad day.
Absolutely.
It's okay to not be 100% and know that, hey, I know I can go to, you know, Miss Erica's office and know that I can sit in there for 5-10 minutes, regather myself, regather my thoughts, and then go back and be my best self in class once I, you know, I give myself that time.
Absolutely. And we intercept our kids walking in. You know, I will tell kids, I can tell by the look on your face that you're having a hard morning, and we'll pull them in here to the office, give them some love, get them ready for the day. Because we all know as parents, some mornings are are hard, you know, and sometimes kids don't get ready on time or forget their backpacks, things like that. So we try to fill that gap and get them ready to be their best self.
I love it. I love it. So thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it. We are going to end like we end every episode with a question. What is the best piece of advice or guidance that you have ever received from a teacher?
So I think the best piece of advice I have had from a mentor was from one of my mentors, Chanel, and she helped me while I was getting my admin license. And she would always share that the principal is like the weatherman of the building. And so by our temperature, by our temperament, we set the stage for the building. And so I try to be mindful of that because, you know, principals have hard days and have rotten days, but I have to come across with a positive attitude, a positive outlook, because that's what sets the stage for the rest of the school. That has been a huge piece for me.